Welcome to episode 73 of Frank Reactions, the podcast where we help you profit from the digital era through better customer experiences online and off. My name's Tema Frank. Last week, I was down in Atlanta for the Customer Experience Professionals Association's Insight Exchange and had the pleasure of hearing some really interesting talks, so I will be bringing you a few of those. This week, we are starting with Renee Cachillo, who is the Senior Vice President of Customer Brand and Technology at Safelite Group, which is a large auto glass replacement and repair company in the United States. When I'm interviewing at conferences, often people are feeling kind of time-pressed because they want to get back to chatting or going to the next session. So the episodes from the conference are a little bit shorter than usual. And I'd be curious to know what you think. Do you prefer this shorter format? Personally, I like listening to podcasts that are at least a half hour long because, you know, that's sort of a typical drive time or about how long it takes me to fall asleep. But I know that a lot of people prefer a shorter format. So I'd be curious. Please let me know. Just send me a note, Tema, T-E-M as in marketing A, at frankreactions.com. Or call and leave a message at 1-866-544-9262. Or just send me a note on Twitter or LinkedIn or on the Frank Reactions Facebook page and let me know, do you prefer a shorter format or a longer format? Here we go with today's interview with Renee Cachillo of Safelite.
My name's Renee Cachillo, and I'm the Senior Vice President of Customer Brand and Technology with Safelite Group.
Just for the audience, for those who don't know, because I come from Canada and wasn't familiar, can you tell us what is Safelite Group?
Yeah, one of the big brands in Safelite Group is really Safelite Autoglass, and we are the nation's largest vehicle repair and replacement company.
And I gather from your presentation that you actually do on-site visits, so your repair people come out to people's homes.
Yeah, we have about 75% of our workforce is mobile, so they actually mobile out to the customer to actually do the service on their vehicle for their windshield or any of their side or even their back glass.
You started running customer experience improvement stuff for the company. What did you face when you first started looking at these issues?
I think the big piece for us was that we had been very proud of big improvements in our NPS score. So in 2007, we switched to NPS from CSI, and we started at a 73 NPS, and in 2011, we had achieved an 85.
Okay.
So great improvement, but the kind of question in the back of our mind was, what's next? And even if we get to increase that NPS over time, how do we make sure that we also sustain it with all of the changing technology and emerging trends from customers?
Okay. And what do you think had led to that increase in the first place?
I think having a technician workforce that was really focused on working with customers, that went through different kinds of assessments in their hiring and recruitment.
Okay.
We always say that in the past, our technicians could tell you the color of the customer's shoes, but not the color of their eyes, and we wanted them to actually know the color of their eyes.
Sounds like physicists.
That's right.
Sorry to any physicists listening.
Right.
So you talked about the importance at first of changing values and vision. So one of the things I thought was interesting, you'd made a comment about, you know, on the one hand, we're telling people that people are what matter, but to the investors, they're what matter, and you had to somehow reconcile that. Can you talk a bit about that?
Sure. So what we talked about was that it's important that you're all aligned internally on who you serve. Mm-hmm. And is it your shareholders, your employees, or your customers? And that until you're all on the same page, if some people are trying to serve their shareholders, because that's the thing you need to do in your organization based off how you're held, at that time we were held by private equity, then you can't say and tell everyone that you're really all about your customers. Because at the end of the day, your decisions are going to be based off what your shareholders want.
Right.
So we needed to align ourselves around one of those. And we actually chose to move to our employees, our
people. And how did you convince shareholders that that was the right thing to do?
Well, at the time that that happened, we were sold from private equity to our parent company.
Okay.
And our parent company has us held almost privately. They're like our sourcing center, and they wanted us to invest in these types of things.
Okay.
So with that change in leadership, it gave us the opportunity to say, we're really going to focus on our people.
Okay.
And then we looked at, so not only on our people, but then what discipline are we going to operate in? Are we going to be an operationally focused company? Or are we going to be a company that's great at products? Well, we don't really manufacture too many windshields. Mm-hmm. And so it really wasn't about the product for us. So that one we could cross off. Mm-hmm. Or is it really around being customer-centric or what we call customer-driven? Mm-hmm. And we had traditionally operated as an operationally focused company. Mm-hmm. We really were a very efficient group. And we decided that we really needed to keep those best practices, but really move towards thinking about customer centricity and being customer driven. And so our discipline shifted the second time to then show now we're going to serve people, but our discipline that we're going to actually execute against is around our customers.
Well, one of the things that I thought was really intriguing is you mentioned that you were very efficient, which is a good thing. And as a customer, you think, well, we want them here quickly, we want it dealt with quickly. And you discovered from your research that the speed of arrival wasn't as big a deal as some other variables. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, so one of the things we learned was we had a hypothesis that when you schedule an appointment with us, that you didn't want a 4-hour service window, that you wanted a 2-hour service window. And so it was banter internally that we thought we needed to change. But at the same time, we also know that no one wants to be delayed or late. And we don't want to set our technicians up to fail because we need to care about them. We need to set them up for success on every single job. And so when we looked at it, our customers told us it's really not about the 2-hour window, as we internally had hypothesized. It's really around, I just want to know 30 minutes when you're on your way.
Hmm.
Because if I'm in a meeting, then I know what I need to work around. If I need to get home in time to meet you at my house, I can do that as well. It wasn't so much around a 2 or 4 hour window. It was around, I just need to know 30 minutes when you're on your way.
Hmm. And so how did you go about making that happen then?
So what we did was we actually created an on my way text message that the technician triggers, and they can set it at 40, 30, or 20 minutes, whatever's going to work for them, because they drive and they can't text when they're driving. We turn it off on their phone. And so they get to trigger it. And it's a standard message. It also shows a picture of them so that you know who's coming as a reminder. And the customer gets it and knows that they'll be there in a certain window. And then we measure them on how often they arrive in the window that they quote. And we have over 90% effectiveness of them arriving inside of the time frame that we quote.
Hmm. You've tried it out, and customers were positive about it.
Yeah, very positive. Now, it did not raise the NPS score. The NPS stayed flat, but we had a lot of really positive comments. Mm-hmm. And here's the other thing. 80% of our customers signed up for the text message.
Right.
They had to opt in because texting is something you could get a charge for.
Right.
And so legally it's required that you ask for an opt-in, and 80% are opting in, and we're delivering it and arriving in the window 90% of the time.
That's excellent. And I would guess for your drivers, that gives them a little bit more of a feeling of control as well.
Right.
Yeah.
In the past, they used to try and call ahead.
Yes.
And who answers their phone?
Right.
People, the last thing they want to do anymore with their smartphone is actually talk on it.
Yeah.
And a text message is actually read on average every 6 seconds.
Every 6 seconds?
Yep. People look at it that quickly. So wow. The difference of a voicemail from an unidentified number.
Of course. Of course.
It's
that
huge.
Makes total sense. So you talked about some of the other mobile experiences. One of the comments that you made that I personally have said for a long time is there's no point having a mobile app if it's not something you use regularly, mm-hmm. and if it doesn't offer anything better than the web experience.
Right.
How has that changed what you're doing or affected what you're doing?
Well, you know, at first we thought to be omnichannel, we needed to have an app.
Mm-hmm.
And then we realized to just do things, to check a box isn't the right thing to do. To be on my phone, you would actually have to add some serious value. So for me, it's something like a Southwest app, an mm-hmm. Amazon app, mm-hmm. a Nordstrom app. All my favorite things that I want to go back into over and over again that I use on a regular basis or whenever I choose to. Mm-hmm. It always needs to be there. That's really not how our service works with customers. Customers don't have glass damage every day.
At least
they do,
I hope
if
not.
If they do, I feel bad for them.
Yeah.
Right? And so we needed to be realistic around how do they really want our service delivered. Now, I'm not saying we won't ever do that. If I could offer them additional services, that would be value add. But right now, we don't have them to offer. Mm-hmm. So what we're going to do is continue to have a great mobile site, which is a responsive design with our online site. And then we're going to continue to leverage that for in-the-moment things that they need, because once they're done, we're done.
You also brought up a really, I thought, great example about the frustration of promo codes. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, so it was really kind of one of those litmus tests of are you really a customer-driven organization or not? Because we have allowed customers to enter promotional codes on our website. And we used to have a box that just sat there, and it was open, and it said lightly inside, enter promo code here. And no one complained about it, and we had a lot of redemption through it. And what we did was we said, let's turn it off, because it really, for anyone who has to go find one because they feel like they aren't getting the right deal, is not the experience that we really started out wanting to deliver. And so we turned it off. We actually just made it a click of text that, you know, if you have a promo code, click here, and made it much more discreet. And a lot of customers don't enter it now. The redemption dropped and the NPS went up just a little bit. And the great thing is we actually didn't lose any revenue or profit, which is what people are concerned about. But we did the right thing for the customer, and we didn't know what the result would be. It just felt like the right thing to do.
Which is funny when you think about it, that taking away a promo box would be doing the right thing for the customer.
Right.
But it's true. I mean, I do that all the time. If I see a promo box, I'm going to go around and hunt for a promo code.
Right. It's just an annoyance.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
Although you still had the link there so that you could still use promo codes.
Mm-hmm.
But a link, you're saying, didn't catch the same attention or the same feeling that I need to fill this box.
Yes. It was just the difference in how the consumer perceived it. And that's what matters.
Okay. And also, I think you made a really good point, too, that one of the things that's frustrating on mobile is when you have to enter text.
Yes.
And by making it a clickable link, you're sort of dealing with that issue. It makes it a lot easier. You also discussed making things easier from a mobile perspective for the technicians, mm-hmm. and how they would report their progress and what they're doing. Can you talk a bit more about that?
Yeah, so we have a really proprietary application that's out in the field on our technician's handheld device. It's worked very well for us over the years. It's something that I think was actually a big competitive advantage and still is.
Mm-hmm.
But it's really geared towards the things that we have appreciated in the past. When did you start the work? How long does the work take? Where are you in your status? So that I can get you to the next customer. But it wasn't data that I can share with the customer. So we're looking at how do we redesign it so that it can have both applications inside of it. And that's one of the pieces of work that we'll be focusing on in the future. How do I deliver something so that when the technician statuses something, and hopefully, again, it'll be on a wearable device so they don't have to pick up their phone,
mm-hmm.
That it'll be easier for them to do, so they'll do it more often,
mm-hmm.
But that it also sends information that the customer finds valuable.
Hmm, okay. And you commented about making things more Uber-like,
mm-hmm.
and the fact that your NPS score is great for you internally to know what's going on and how customers perceive you, but it doesn't help the customer any. So what did you decide you want to move towards?
So we're actually moving towards online reviews, and we offer it off of our NPS survey as an option to take one and fill out a 5-star review. We also offer it off of our customer portal. And now when we redesign the application that the technicians use, it will also trigger a 5-star review instantaneously, more like Uber, and we'll explore and learn from that. We think it's really important because the way that customers are going to buy, they want to hear from each other. They want to know what other customers think, and they want them to be authenticated reviews, people who actually use the service. And so for us to be able to promote and put those out there, whether they're good or they're bad, one, they provide tremendous insight to us in the customer experience so we can learn and get better. And the other thing is that it really allows customers to feel good about the choice that they're making.
Absolutely. Is there anything else that you wish I'd asked you and I haven't?
I think the exciting thing is that, you know, we've been on a journey the last couple of years, and a big focus has been becoming omnichannel because we're a 68-year-old company. And now that we're starting to get towards that finish line of having all of the channels available, as well as that customer data layer that's really hard to build sometimes, I'm just so excited about what we can do after omnichannel. And I hope that the customer conversations start to go there rather than just about blocking and tackling and being available anywhere. That's the expectation anymore. It's really about what's next.
So what would you advise a company that's trying to move towards omnichannel?
Get there quickly. And don't overcomplicate it, right? It doesn't mean that you have to have everything done perfect, but already start thinking about what's coming next. Don't wait. You can parallel path some things, even if all the data's not there to plug in.
Perfect. Thank you very mm-hmm. much for your time.
Yeah, thank you.
I really enjoyed Renee's talk. I felt that she had really given things a lot of thought, and I love the fact that their approach, and I heard this from a few other speakers at the conference, is very much one of hypothesis testing. So you get an idea, you think why that might be the case, you test it out, and then you adjust based on what you've learned. For instance, in this case, they had a hypothesis that shortening the window of time during which they would arrive and guaranteeing it in a shorter period of time would actually make customers happier. But what they found was people didn't want a 4-hour window or a 2-hour window.
they were happy with a half hour window, but just let us know when it's happening so that instead of sitting at home for half a day, we can be at work and then just whip home when it's time. Although I didn't quite figure out, if it's a mobile service, why didn't they just come meet people at work? I guess people who don't drive to work still have that issue. Or I suppose if your windshield is totally smashed, you can't really drive to work. Duh. I didn't think that went through, did I? I think some of the other good points she made were to really think carefully about mobile and how that fits into your organization's online strategy. Do you really need an app? Whether you need one or not, how user-friendly is your app and how user-friendly is the mobile version of your website? Are you making people type in a lot of information? That's a pain in the butt to have to do on a little tiny phone. Even for people my kids' age who can type way faster on a phone than I can type way faster on a keyboard, but that's a separate issue. So really think that one through and make sure you do end user testing. And the final point that I think is worth really thinking about is the growing role of consumer reviews. We've all talked about it, but it's coming to more and more areas. And so this company, instead of trying to fight that reality, said, let's really embrace it. We think, generally speaking, our service is really good, our quality is really good. So let's actually encourage people to do reviews. I've seen that also in things like Airbnb. When you finish your stay, you immediately do get a message encouraging you to leave an online review. Same thing, Amazon does that. Lots of companies do that. And if you make it easy for customers to do, generally speaking, they are willing to at very least give a star rating, if not an actual customer review. There's a podcast I discovered recently because I was interviewed on it called Manipurated, R-A-T-E-D, the Manipurated podcast by Daniel Lemon. And there he really focuses that whole show on the implications of online ratings and reviews and how you as an organization can work with those. So you might want to check out the Manipurated podcast and look for my episode. But also I'm going to be interviewing Daniel as well. So you'll hear a little bit more about that on the Frank Reactions podcast. That's it for today. I'm headed off to Toronto next week for ETEL Canada, where I will be giving a talk about the role of technology in retail and the link between the technology and the human factor. And if you have not already downloaded your free chapter of People Shock, The Path to Profits When Customers Rule, my new book, go to peopleshock.com and you can get the introduction and first chapter free. You can also buy the book online at Amazon. And if you email me your receipt, I will immediately email you a PDF version of it. So you don't even have to wait for a physical copy to come if that's what you've chosen to order. So if you do that, just email me, TEMarketingA@frankreactions.com. I look forward to chatting with you again next week. Bye.